From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. We Americans are self-segregating and clustering ourselves into like-minded communities. That's according to Bill Bishop, the author of The Big Sort. This hour, we'll have a conversation with Bill Bishop in advance of his appearance Thursday at Drake University. Bishop says the communities where we live are becoming less diverse, even as the country as a whole might be gaining diversity. He's part of the Better Together, Creating Community Through Civility speaker series. A little later in the program, we'll be joined by Connie Ryan Terrell, Executive Director of the Interfaith Alliance of Iowa, and Barry Griswell, President of the Des Moines Community Foundation. They'll tell us why their organizations are involved in the Civility Speaker Series. That's all coming up right after this news. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We Americans are self-segregating and clustering ourselves into like-minded communities. That's according to Bill Bishop, the author of The Big Sort, Why the Clustering of Like-Minded America is Tearing Us Apart. Bishop says the communities where we live are becoming less diverse, even as the country as a whole might be gaining diversity. This hour, we talk with Bill Bishop in advance of his appearance Thursday at Drake University. His appearance is part of the Better Together, Creating Community Through Civility speaker series. A little later in the program, we'll be joined by Connie Ryan Terrell, Executive Director of the Interfaith Alliance of Iowa, and Barry Griswell, President of the Des Moines Community Foundation. Ask them about why their organizations are involved in the Civility Speaker Series. But first, let's talk to Bill Bishop. Bill Bishop was a reporter at the Austin American Statesman when he began research on city growth and political polarization with the sociologist and statistician Robert Cushing. Bishop has worked as a columnist for the Lexington Herald Leader and, with his wife, owned a weekly newspaper in Smithville, Texas. Bill Bishop joins us this afternoon by phone. Good afternoon to you, Bill.
Good afternoon.
You write that over the past 30 years, the U.S. has been sorting itself. Explain the nature of the sorting you describe in your book.
Well, it's hard to find an area where communities are not growing more different. The book is largely about how about two-thirds of the counties in the United States over the last 30 years have gotten increasingly either Republican or Democratic. But you could just as well look at education rates, mortality rates, family formation patterns, as we've got this incredible freedom now to move around. We're better educated than ever, and we're using that education and that freedom to live around those who are like ourselves, and that's the phenomenon that we chronicle in The Big Sort.
You can see it very well in the maps you provide in the front of your book. You have presidential voting results for each county since 1948, and then you can see really a picture of how we have been sorting ourselves. Can you give any regions, areas that really highlight this sorting?
Well, you know, you can look at the Deep South, which has become increasingly Republican, and you can look at the Pacific Coast, which has become increasingly Democratic. But I think the point is that it's not a regional phenomenon as much as it is a community phenomenon. That the real unit of measurement here is the neighborhood, or what we use as the county. Mm-hmm. So I live in Travis County, Texas. You know, big bad Republican Texas. Well, you know, my neighborhood is about 90% Democratic, and Austin is getting increasingly Democratic. So it's not a regional phenomenon as much as it is a community phenomenon.
In fact, in your book, you tell the story of you and your wife looking for a neighborhood to live in Austin, and having it right there in front of your face. Tell us a little bit of what you found out in looking for a place to live and what some of the residents experienced.
Well, what we find is that, I think that the phenomenon we're really documenting is the clustering of lifestyles. I was on a radio show in Minneapolis, and several people called to say that, you know, they knew that they were in the wrong community because their neighbors used lawn chemicals and they didn't, and that was the key to them, that they were in a They were in a Republican neighborhood, and they were really Democrats. And we pick up all these keys, whether the houses are close together. The communities that have more density are becoming increasingly Democratic. So, in fact, there are even subdivisions now that are built for people's lifestyle preferences in this kind of way. So there's a subdivision in California where there are big columns and a land set aside for a Christian school, and then in another part of the same subdivision, everything is kind of green technology, and there's a Montessori school. So so those are the kinds of things. It's almost a Jeff Foxworthy cliche in a sense that we're all experiencing. But when you live in a neighborhood like mine where the school color of the elementary school is tie-dye, you know that you're kind of in a Democratic area.
I want to reach out to our listeners to see if we can get any firsthand experiences from Exchange listeners. Have you ever moved into a neighborhood that didn't match your lifestyle, your politics, your religion? What was it like? Do these considerations play a role when you move? Have you moved specifically because your neighborhood's lifestyle, politics, just didn't suit you? We want to hear your story this hour. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Or The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. You say this track this beginning happening about 30 years ago in the mid-70s. You take statistics from the mid-70s through 2004, the election. What started happening 30 years ago to drive this?
Well, I think that's kind of a mystery. I can tell you that almost all these trends started at the same time. Also beginning in the 1970s, people with education began to cluster in particular places rather than others. Also in the 1970s, income distribution from place to place began to become more unequal. There was a general breakdown in society in the 1960s, not the kind of thing that we think about, but in terms of riots or drugs or the counterculture, but basic institutions began to lose favor in the 1960s. Mainline churches began to lose membership in the mid-1960s. Divorce rates began to go up, and the big units of society began to break down in favor of smaller, more homogeneous groups. And we think that it's because as people get richer, they begin to look for different things in life, and the personal becomes more important than the community or the nation, and people begin to shape their lives more intently, and that's resulted in these more homogeneous churches and clubs and neighborhoods that we write about in the book.
Okay, we're reaching out to our listeners this hour to find out how you have sorted yourself. Have you moved into a neighborhood that didn't match your politics and find you had to move? Did the lifestyle in your neighborhood change? We want to hear from you. 1-866-780-9100. Let's go to Brittany in Waterloo. Good afternoon, Brittany. Thank you for joining The Exchange.
Yes. When I was first out of college, my husband and I moved to a small community and took my first teaching job. And all the excitement, I didn't really look around me and consider politics and ideology. But gradually, I realized that everyone around me was of kind of an opposite ideology than what we had. And we started to feel pressure to change and assimilate to this local culture. So then we found ourselves expecting our first child, and the first thing we decided to do was move back to a city to get more diversity.
So tell me a little bit more, Brittany, the specifics of what you called the pressure. What would happen in the driveway or when you were talking with neighbors? Or what form did that pressure come in? Can you give us a specific example or two?
Well, I specifically remember being at parent-teacher conferences and having several parents comment about the fact that we didn't go to the large church in town. And where did we go to church? They were very concerned about the fact that they hadn't seen us on Sundays. And they would ask us about deliveries at our homes and why we shopped at certain places and let us know that for however many decades people usually shopped in, you know, other places. And it was just very bizarre. And they questioned, you know, whether I was going to quit my job and stay home and work like most of the mothers did in town after they found out I was expecting our child. So it was still a very much conservative ideology that was kind of shocking, very much homophobic. That wasn't exactly how we wanted to.
Was there an event or a conversation you had with neighbors that was really the breaking point and you and your husband said, that's it, we're out of here?
Well, I specifically remember I was teaching a specific short story where it was about a child who had homosexual parents and how they dealt with that. And there was like an uprising, like beyond belief, like within the community about this 5-page short story. And they were talking about how the superintendent got stopped at the golf course in town so that way they could have this meeting at the church about me and my story. And I was like, oh my gosh, what if that was my child who said something and the town's having a meeting? And we just can't raise someone in this environment where people are so close-minded.
Brittany, thank you for sharing your experiences. Brittany calling from Waterloo, thank you.
Thank you.
If you've got an experience to share along these lines, self-sorting, perhaps you moved into a neighborhood that didn't suit you in lifestyle, in religion, in politics, what was it like? Give us an example of what you've experienced. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. Email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. It's interesting that you point out Bill Bishop. If you've just joined us, Bill Bishop, author of The Big Sort, Why the Clustering of Like-Minded America is Tearing Us Apart, speaking at Drake University this Thursday. Interesting that this, as you mentioned before, this big sorting comes at a time of unprecedented physical and economic mobility. We have these freedoms, and they have increased segregation. Could that have been predicted?
I think that it could have been, yes. I mean, that's what social psychologists see, that given a choice, people will choose to be around those who are like themselves. We often complain about not having a choice in local newspapers. Well, in Europe, there are, you know, most places have a liberal paper and a conservative paper, papers from different points of view. And what people found is that people who are conservative get the conservative paper and people who are liberal get the liberal paper. And the proliferation of choices gives us the opportunity to do what we do naturally.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk more about the media. How much of a role do the media play in informing or promoting this self-segregation? We grew up in a time, many of us grew up in a time of three networks plus public television. Now we have a zillion cable channels. We can seek out the information we agree with, right?
Oh yeah, and what happens is that we lack that common point of discussion. We're a common experience every day. I grew up in Kentucky, and it's probably like with the Des Moines Register. At the time, it was distributed in every county, 120 counties in Kentucky. Everyone, the newspaper out of Louisville Courier Journal, and everyone read the Courier. That was the place where everybody started their day, and that. The economics of newspapering is that it's not distributed in all the counties, and the proliferation of choices means that people, you know, go to the news source that best fits their point of view.
Mm-hmm. In broadcast journalism, I believe the fairness doctrine went away in the 1980s. Do you see the disappearance of the fairness doctrine, which required broadcasters to include other points of view as playing a role in this as well?
You know, I think this is really us. This is really, you know, we can blame politicians or we can blame changes in law or economics, but this is really what we want, and we're getting exactly what we want.
Okay, let's go to Christian in Davenport, 1-866-780-9100. Christian, good afternoon to you. Christian, are you there?
Yes, hi. So I am originally from Puerto Rico, and when I was applying for grad school, I was looking for places actually that were liberal because I really didn't want to go to some conservative area. So I remember grabbing a map of the states and just going with a magic marker and going to the states that I did not want to move to. I ended up in Iowa City for my master's, and while I thought it was a very liberal place, and I'm an openly gay Latino, I realized when I got there that I had to explain over and over the fact that I was from Puerto Rico, that I was a U.S. citizen, all these things. Later on, I graduated and moved to Davenport for a job, and actually worked for in Moline. But I realized that once I moved here, I still have to explain myself. You're never going to find a place that completely fits with what you believe in. So I came to terms with the fact that I just have to teach people, and that's the way it's going to be.
Mm-hmm. Did you find it easier to explain yourself and fit in Iowa City than in Davenport, or vice versa?
I don't know. Each one has its differences. The Quad City area has more of a Latino population, so that side was not that difficult. But the fact about being liberal and LGBT was a little bit harder. But then in Iowa City, the gay part was not such a huge issue as the Latino part was a little bit more difficult. You know, going to the bank and being asked for my green card to get a bank account or things like that, and trying to explain people, first of all, you cannot ask for that. Second of all, you know, I'm a U.S. citizen, et cetera. Mm. So it was just different.
Okay, Christian, we hope you're happy where you are. Thank you.
I am.
Very good. Thank you for calling from Davenport.
Thank you very much.
If you have an instance of self-sorting, or if you've ever moved into a neighborhood that didn't match your politics, your lifestyle, what was it like? What did you do? 1-866-780-9100, The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. As we mentioned at the outset, Bill Bishop, you worked with the sociologist and statistician Robert Cushing. Tell us his role here and how he influenced your work and what became this book.
Oh, well, Bob was just is a stats genius, and that means that he is inventive. We began looking at why some cities were getting richer than others, and we could see that this sorting process was taking place so that some places collected more people with education, and they produced more patents, and they had higher incomes. And he said, well, I wondered if this sorting played out in politics. And what we could see was that the cities that were high in technology beginning in 1980 became also more democratic over time. And the cities that were low in technology, produced few patents, were getting more Republican. And at that point, we decided, well, maybe we should look at this phenomenon at a smaller level. And Bob went in, and he just does, you know, boy, it really helps to have the data to back up what you think is happening. I mean, we didn't, you know, we sort of discovered this through the data, not through anything that we believed or saw out in our neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm. 1-866-780-9100 to join our conversation with Bill Bishop, the author of The Big Sort, Why the Clustering of Like-Minded America is Tearing Us Apart. Heather joins us from Des Moines. Good afternoon, Heather.
Hi. I live in an area of Des Moines, and when we first moved back to Iowa from Washington, D.C., we picked a neighborhood that was very much like what we thought we wanted, and we ended up moving to a neighborhood that was much more diverse, and we've never felt more at home there than any place else we've ever lived. And we have, you know, very conservative religious people in one house, and we have, you know, very liberal people in another house, and we all get together and we have a great time, and I feel very, very fortunate for that experience.
Well, Heather, you are a prime example. What we wanted to talk to is how this, but talk about how this discussion fits into this series, this Civility Speakers series, because Bill Bishop, what does it take to live in a diverse neighborhood, the wish not to self-segregate, to be with people who are not of like minds?
Well, it takes being someone like Heather, who's an adult, you know, who realizes that, you know, things get mixed up, and there's not an answer, and you have to live with ambiguity, and that's just kind of being a grown-up in a democracy.
I loved one time we had a barbecue in our neighborhood, and I ended up explaining the Eucharist to my children and gay marriage within the same barbecue. And I'm like, what a wonderful thing.
How do you not become you or anyone else? How do you guard from people getting to be hot-headed and you know, start an argument? Like, that would be uncivil.
I don't know. I think we have a healthy curiosity among all the people who, you know, my husband and I don't go to church, but my neighbor is a pastor, and so last Sunday we went to church to hear him speak. And, you know, you just have an openness to what you don't know about.
Interesting. Heather, thank you for your input, your experience. Heather calling from Des Moines. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, or email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. Let's go to Jim in West Des Moines. Hi, Jim. What's your experience?
Hey. Well, actually, I live in a community, West Des Moines, which is pretty homogeneous, in its own way. But my question was going to be, I guess, of your guest, that his premise seems to be that that there's some negative, or maybe not negative, but it's tearing us apart, and I was kind of curious, because it seems to me that this is somewhat of a natural conclusion. I mean, I look at our nature, and I see that dogs don't hang out with cats, and vice versa, as a general rule. So, you know, that there may be some positives to that, there may be some negatives, but I was kind of curious what are some of the outcomes that are results from his, you know, are we getting torn apart, and what should we do about it, or should we do anything about it?
Okay, Jim, very good. Furthering our conversation there from West Des Moines. So tell us what, first of all, we've got about 3 minutes before our break, a couple minutes before our break. We'll have to pick this up after the break as well. What is the big problem with self-segregation?
Well, the problem is that like-minded groups over time become more extreme in the way that they're like-minded. If you have a group of liberals and you put them together to talk about gay marriage, at the end of the hour discussion, they'll be more liberal than before they went into the room. And so the process, people don't hear the other side. They don't live in neighborhoods like Heather's, where they're constantly hearing counter arguments. So they become more firm in their beliefs, less willing to compromise, and over time more extreme in their beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think what you see in this country is two things happening. Locally, where groups are more homogenous, there you can get things done because people generally agree with one another. Nationally and among a lot of states, it becomes increasingly hard to do anything transformative because there's such deep-seated disagreement that comes out of these communities that are growing more extreme over time as they grow more homogenous over
mm-hmm.
time.
We have in 30 seconds or so, we've got to take a break here, but quickly, do you see any upside to this self-segregation?
Well, the upside is you got this incredible diversity from place to place to place around the United States, so people can find the places where they are fulfilled.
Okay. What do you think of this argument, the big sort, exchange listeners? We have Bill Bishop with us. He'll stay with us for the entire hour, author of The Big Sort, Why the Clustering of Like-Minded America is Tearing Us Apart. Do you think this is a problem? Is The Big Sort a big problem? Have you experienced it yourself? Have you sought out diversity like Heather in Des Moines? We want to hear your story this hour. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Or theexchange@iowapublicradio.org, our email. We're also on Twitter @IPRTalk. When we come back, we'll talk with Connie Ryan Terrell, Executive Director of the Interfaith Alliance of Iowa, and Barry Griswell, President of the Des Moines Community Foundation, to find out why they're involved in this Civility Speaker Series. That's when we come back. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back with The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. Great to have you with us over the noon hour. I'm Ben Kiefer. The vast majority of faculty at universities self-identify as liberal when asked about their political leanings. But new research shows that a professor's political beliefs have little impact on the political beliefs of their students. Tomorrow on this program, we'll talk with researchers about these findings. We'll ask students what did help to form their political belief system and find out what two political science professors have observed in their classrooms and on their campuses. That's tomorrow on The Exchange. Today, we are talking about self-segregation in America, clustering ourselves into like-minded communities. Bill Bishop is with us. He says communities where we live are becoming less diverse even as the country as a whole might be gaining diversity. And he is the author of The Big Sort, Why the Clustering of Like-Minded America is Tearing Us Apart. He'll be speaking this Thursday, September 17th at 7 p.m. in Cheslow Auditorium at Drake University. It's part of the Better Together Creating Community Through Civility speaker series. Bill is joining us on the line, and we'd like to introduce two representatives of partnering organizations in this Civility Speakers Series. Connie Ryan Terrell is the Executive Director of the Interfaith Alliance of Iowa. Connie, welcome to our program.
Thank you, Ben, for having us today.
And Barry Griswell is with Connie at our studios in Des Moines, President of the Des Moines Community Foundation. Barry, welcome.
Thanks, Ben and Bill. We're looking forward to seeing you in just a few days.
Great.
Barry, let me start with you. Why do you feel it's important to discuss this, have Bill here to discuss his topic in the context of civility?
Well, I've had a very personal and real concern for a number of years on the growing lack of civility in society. When I became president of the Community Foundation, I really found myself in a position to try to do something about it. And I found that other communities, in fact, were trying to make a difference in this area. And in fact, I think I gave my first speech. I said, you know, I want to do something about the lack of civility. And Connie and Ambassador Mary Kramer and Connie Weimer, a number of people in the community came up and said, we want to be part of this. We believe this is incredibly important. And the reason that we care, and Bill's kind of talked about this, is, you know, we're getting nothing done politically or otherwise by going to our respective corners and taking our balls and playing with ourselves. We've got to create a game where everybody's in the game, everybody's trying to solve problems for the best of our country. And you know, I'm a grandfather now, and I'm very concerned that what we're going to be leaving our grandchildren and our children if we just keep these antics up of arguing and spitting on each other and this lack of decorum, lack of civil discourse is, I think, extraordinarily dangerous.
Connie, please comment on that, the importance of this discussion in your civility series.
I think it's incredibly important in our communities, not only in Iowa, but across our nation. And we have to look at why we have come to a point in our nation where it's more common to be uncivil with one another than it is to be civil with one another. And it's across the issues and it's across the levels of discussion. So whether we're talking about politics or religion or just what's happening in our own neighborhoods. And so I think that this Civility Project is really meant to engage people in the conversation, not only to learn about it, but to hopefully do something about it in their own lives.
Mm-hmm. Connie, I'd like to have you comment. Of course, in the news concerning faith, we had the big Ground Zero Islamic Center planned, and also the planning of a burning Quran on the anniversary of 9/11. This had to set off alarm bells with you.
Absolutely. It's of grave concern, not only for me as the director of Interfaith Alliance of Iowa, but for looking at people across faith traditions and our friends in the Muslim community. And it's so important that we continue to connect people and to build relationships with one another. You know, it's really difficult to be angry with someone or to be hate-mongering toward them if you know them and you have a relationship with them. So when we sort ourselves out and we don't know folks from other faith traditions or even, you know, Presbyterian and Methodist, you know, it's important that we know that we live in a pluralistic society and that we be respectful for one another, with one another. And so issues such as the mosque in New York City or you know, threats to burn the holy book of another faith tradition are very concerning in our world.
Could this happen in Iowa, such extremes, such tempers, such actions?
Certainly. I think that it could happen, except that in Iowa we're also very practical, and we have this sense of neighborliness and helping one another. And Barry and I and the other partner organizations have talked about that at great length. And when you grow up in an agricultural society and you have to help one another out, I think it lends itself to stopping at a certain point and saying, we're not going to be uncivil with one another, and we're going to do this a different way. So I think we have the grounding to make the conversation go in a different direction than what's happened in other areas.
Connie Ryan Terrell, Executive Director of the Interfaith Alliance of Iowa, along with Barry Griswell, President of the Des Moines Community Foundation, and they are joined by Bill Bishop. In our conversation today, we want to reach out to our listeners in the remainder of the hour. Do you feel more comfortable with like-minded people? Is that okay, seeking out your own people to bat around your narrower opinions? Or do you seek out a diversity of faiths, politics, community, where you live, where you go to church? We want to hear your experience. 1-866-780-9100. The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org is our email. Here's an interesting, a fun email from Peter. Peter writes, being a foreigner who moved to Iowa City 6 years ago, it's very difficult to adapt, he writes. Everyone on my street, which is a Democratic area in a Democratic city, uses a separate and gasoline-powered lawnmower. We are the only people who use a push mower. And my first year, I was clearing the snow from in front of the neighbors' houses, but my wife warned me that I would be branded a communist. Only clear your own property, she told me. So an interesting comment there. We also have an email from Carrie. Carrie writes, our rapidly changing world seems to get more complicated by the day. Making sense of things is a chore. We gravitate to the opinions we hold near and dear. Conservatives to places like Fox and Rush Limbaugh, liberals to MSNBC, NPR. We don't have time anymore to form our own opinions. We align ourselves with those talking on our behalf. Unfortunately, writes Carrie, those representing our views are more polarized like never before. Civility is just an afterthought. So how do we restore civility in our discussions and perhaps become more comfortable with a diversity of opinion, with a diversity of faiths? Bill, let me throw that to you.
Well, I keep going thinking about what Heather said, and her example was so good because really mixed company does moderate opinions, and the mixture, how that mixture takes place is important. I mean, they lived in the same neighborhood, and they sort of, they confronted a tree that may have fallen across the road, or they had problems with cable television or whatever. They had things to work on together so that they weren't thrown together to talk about for one night their political differences. They lived together, and those political differences were just a part of how they existed. And the trouble is, actually, the more educated we get, the less likely we are to seek out those sorts of differences. Mm. And you know, I don't know how to get that, how you get that mixed company artificially, except at work. And work is the one place where people do rub up against those who with whom they disagree. And I think that's a place to start.
Barry, what are your thoughts on that? What do we need to increase civility and perhaps at the same time spread out, welcome a diversity of opinions, a diversity of faiths a little more than we have been?
Sure. Well, this speaker series is going to conclude in February with a gentleman by the name of Dr. P.M. Forney, and he's written a book called Choosing Civility, and we're going to use that as our focal point. And he actually has 26, I think, principles he talks about in terms of and it really starts with the individual. I mean, the way I'm starting my journey is I'm looking inwardly and I say, you know, I'm not perfect in this area by any means. I'm going to do a better job personally. We also know that isolationism is part of this. We know that people don't entertain as much. People don't have people in their homes. And so I think having people in your home of different views is a great way to start. I think we've got to make a concerted effort to put ourselves in situations where we're around other people. You know, the one thing, Ben, that I find most negative about this is what I call egocentric motive attribution, where, you know, once I think I know Connie because she's given me one view of herself, this is what I think on this particular item, then I can wrap her up and categorize her as if I know everything there is to know about Connie. And, you know, that's just an insult to Connie's intelligence and her being a broad-based human being. And so I think we've got to be careful not to just jump to conclusions and categorize based on a single motive. And the other thing I'm really after right now is false information. you know, I'm on Facebook. I'm an avid user of Facebook, and I'm sitting there reading Facebook, and somebody makes a post, and it makes an assertion that something happened that would just be unbelievable if it really happened. And so I say, gee, I think I'll go research that. I'll go find out if so-and-so was on Meet the Press on such and such a date and really said such and such. And I go out and you know what I find? It's a total lie. It's a total misinformation that somebody made up, somebody passed it on. And I think that's the real danger is we all start making decisions based on false assumptions about people's motives, and then we start making decisions on false information.
And
I
Bill,
know of nothing.
Go ahead.
Excuse me. Go ahead.
Sorry. And this is I just want to jump in. This is exactly what Bill Bishop was talking about when you get the dangers, talking about the dangers of homogeneous groups, that there's no one in a less diverse group, there's no one to question that information, is there, Bill?
Yeah, you don't hear the counter argument. And so that makes you believe what you hear all the more because, hey, everyone believes it. But, you know, the group that you're in, the social context of the group really determines how that group sees the information. So if you have fans on both sides of a football play, when they look at the film of the game, one side will see a penalty where the other side doesn't see a penalty. So even a fact is interpreted differently depending on the group that is doing the interpreting.
A lot of people want to get into our conversation with emails and on the phone. I want to share this email. Catherine writing, when both conservative and liberal factions claim moral superiority, this stops discussion between people of different opinions. It causes us to seek the safety of like-minded people. Like-minded people, because we feel our moral decisions and character are being questioned. Are conservatives more moral than liberals? Are liberals more moral than conservatives? Aren't these supposed to be political opinions without moral designations? Asks Catherine in her email. Let's go to Mount Vernon, where Barbara wants to jump into our conversation. Good afternoon, Barbara.
Hi. I want to say hello to your the book author, because I'm from Texas. I'm from Austin, Texas, and finding myself living in Mount Vernon, Iowa. It was great to be here when Obama was elected, but, you know, it was a tense time, and yet the neighborhood that I'm in, there are people from Baha'is across the street, there are fundamentalists, there are Jews, there are, you know, and I'm using just religion as an indicator. However, we do make conclusions based on that, and we've just been able to go to bonfires together and found common ground and talk pretty openly at times, and other times know when to shut down and not say anything.
Mm-hmm. Barbara, do you have any ground rules that maybe others can follow to look in their neighborhood for the diversity and welcome that diversity so that it doesn't get into be a – yeah,
well,
go ahead.
Having annual, like a neighborhood, two or three blocks will have a street party, and they get the police to shut off the street or even in somebody's backyard and do that. There could be charities that everybody will feel good about and do that. The other thing, though, that I found is really powerful is that I've noticed that children really can sense who is on what side of the fence, if you want to put it that way, since we're talking about that. And I've had numerous conversations with children who are from a very insulated, either politically or religious family, just come over here, and we were sort of the designated mainstream family or kids who lived in sort of a Disney world in terms of their own parents' ideology. They would trust, my husband and I both teach, and they just sort of trusted us to be the house that kids could witness other things. I don't know why they trusted, because I had relationships with the mothers, I think, and I volunteered in the school. Mm-hmm. But it's getting yourself out there, having a certain trust factor, and then I think it is really valuable for children to be able to go over, test out theories that they have heard, and get another opinion, and vice versa. It teaches kids the real world, I think.
Barbara, good tips. We want to move along to some other opinions here. Barbara from Mount Vernon with some really wonderful tips about increasing diversity of opinion. And Barbara mentioned President Obama, the campaign there being uncomfortable for. And I wanted to ask you, Bill Bishop, how do you explain the success of the Obama presidential campaign in this environment? Many believed, if we go back to the 2008 campaign, he would put an end to this extreme partisanship. Why hasn't this happened? Is it beyond the reach of any one person, one president, one movement?
Well, yeah, it's not a top-down phenomenon. It's us, and it's the way we act. And in fact, the Obama campaign used the same campaign tactics that the Bush campaign used in 2004, which were designed to reinforce that sense that your group and your tribe was voting for Obama. And so his campaign was run specifically to as a way to isolate people into these homogenous groups, just as the Republicans did in 4 years earlier.
Mm-hmm. David in Iowa City writes, diversity isn't merely a liberal versus conservative thing, is it? With all this talk of self-segregation, why no explicit mention of the role of race and ethnicity? For instance, some people have more money and power to self-segregate themselves than others. What about children who live in poorly funded public school districts because those who can't afford it move to the greener, often whiter suburban pastures? Bill, good point, huh?
Well, yes. When we look at use the same measures of racial segregation as we use with political segregation, over the past 30 years, we could see essentially no change. In fact, county to county, places got slightly more integrated. During that same period, the segregation between Democrats and Republicans increased by 50%. So while there is still strong racial segregation in the country, it's not increasing, whereas segregation between R's and D's is increasing.
Let's go to Matthew in Des Moines. Good afternoon, Matthew. Welcome to The Exchange.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure. Go ahead. We've got a couple minutes left.
Well, I just want to touch base. Barry mentioned a point earlier about where can you go. I run a place called the Des Moines Social Club in Des Moines, and an explicit part of our mission is to bring together diverse groups of people. So we try and schedule events that have differing demographics or differing bases. We'll have a professional wrestling in the back of the theater, and we'll have a jazz concert in the front to try and get people to rub shoulders a little bit for exactly these reasons.
Any friction ever?
You know, we have, when we first had the wrestlers in the back, we had an art show opening in the front, and there were people who came up to us after the wrestling and said, you know, I would never have set foot in this place, but I'll see you guys next month when you have the next wrestling match. It's been extraordinary.
I love it.
Full disclosure, I helped out a little bit in a very small way with Connie and Barry in trying to get some connections in the community for Bill's visit, which we're all very excited about. And I wanted to mention one more point.
We were very appreciative of him doing that.
Oh, it was our pleasure, and we appreciate everything that you guys are doing to make this series a reality. I think it's a hugely important topic. And one additional thing I think is key is to mention, talking about varieties of segregation, I think economic segregation is huge. And one of the places that you mentioned the workplace, but I think also public schools are vital in this. Getting people mixed together with different groups when they're young is the way that it was set for me anyway, because I knew all kinds of folks in public school when I grew up in North Carolina, and I think that gets you on the right foot of knowing that there's not only one point of view or one way of living.
Matthew, thank you very much for those. Love it. Professional wrestling in the back, art in the front. Matthew, thank you for calling from Des Moines. So we have got about a minute left, and I wanted to turn to Bill Bishop very quickly. Is this the way forward? The way Matthew described it, it's like after you have kind of the blandness of a narrow spectrum, you look at this diversity and someone might say, wow, I would never have gone there had I not been in this group.
Yeah, it's just as it's funny that is such an unnatural thing. Boy, do we have wrestling that night? Is that is that on the agenda? I hope so.
We can arrange it.
Barry, what are your thoughts as we close here quickly?
We're just so happy to be part of this and to try to get more conversation going. We believe it's vital, and we encourage the whole community to take part in this conversation.
Connie, your closing words.
We would just invite people to join us on Thursday night at 7 p.m., and we're glad to have Bill Bishop. And really, it's also about modeling for our children and making sure that we have communities that are doing the right thing and working together.
Since this began from the ground up, it sounds like, Bill Bishop, the solution to is going to be in individual acts in neighborhoods, between neighbors.
I think so.
Okay.
I think that's it.
Let's leave with a little bit of information. If you'd like to find out more about this series, bettertogetheriowa.com. More information about this civility series, Better Together, Creating Community Through Civility Speaker Series. And you can listen to Bill Bishop speak this Thursday, September 16th, 7 p.m. in Cheslow Auditorium at Drake University. Once again, that web address, bettertogether.com, bettertogetheriowa.com. And I want to thank you, Connie Ryan Terrell, Barry Griswell, and most of all, Bill. Thank you, Bill Bishop, for joining us. The Big Sort, Why the Clustering of Like-Minded America is Tearing Us Apart. Thank you all.
Thanks for having me.
And The Exchange is produced by Catherine Perkins and Alex Hoyer. Production assistance today from Lindsay Moon. Technical support from Dennis Reese. In Des Moines, we had help from John Pemble. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Jeff Schmidt. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.